This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Talk show host Tamron Hall calls her son Moses, quote, a child of many. That's because it took a number of people to get him here. The now two-year-old was conceived after many rounds of in vitro fertilization. And if you're unfamiliar, IVF involves shots, a lot of shots, and you either have to inject yourself or have someone do it for you.
There were days that I couldn't muster the strength to inject myself, and I remember specifically a visit in Dallas to give a speech, and my best friend drove about 40 miles to meet me at the hotel, and she gave me my shot that night. One night my husband was out of town, and a dear friend from NBC came over. She gave me a shot. My hairstylist, Johnny, in the back of an Uber. So, I mean, we have some tall tales to share. I can talk.
As someone who once had her husband come to the office to inject her in a conference room the night of the Oscars, I can definitely relate. I can also relate to the fact that Tamron's journey to motherhood was physically and emotionally painful. It was expensive, and it was quite a roller coaster. She was 48 years old when she had Moses, and she had struggled with fertility issues for years before doing IVF. In fact, she'd almost given up on carrying a baby the week she found out she was pregnant.
I believe I was at my last point right before we conceived with Moses, because I had gone through a lot of tests and a lot of stress tests and a lot of just emotional things happening outside of wanting to conceive.
IVF accounts for 1.5% of all babies born in the U.S., and in some metropolitan areas, that number is closer to 5%. So I hope Tamron's story will help people out there who are navigating their own fertility journeys. And if you know someone going through a fertility journey, I hope you'll stick around to hear real women share the top things not to say to that woman. This is Me Becoming Mom, where we talk to famous women you know and love all about their extraordinary journeys to motherhood. I'm Zoe Ruderman from People. So I'm really curious, when did you first realize that you wanted to be a mom?
I don't think I ever thought I wouldn't be a mom. There wasn't a light bulb moment for me where I said, okay, I want to be a mom. I always assumed that I would be. I'm very close to my own mother. I was raised by a strong group of wonderful and amazing and unapologetic Southern Black women who, in addition to making great sacrifices for their family, always, for me, showed me the beauty of family. So it never crossed my mind that I wouldn't be a mom.
So tell me about when you first decided to start trying to have a baby.
I started trying with my husband, I would say, 2 months after we started dating. We started to have the real conversation regarding our life together and if that would include having a child. I think it started out in that awkward kind of joking status, you know, like, oh yeah, we'd be great parents. And then it's turned to real conversations surrounding testing and resources. I was just out of a job for the first time. My stress level was very high. I'd already started with acupuncture because we thought, okay, that would be the very first step, just releasing some of the stress. And we'd seen some of the articles and research on the benefit of acupuncture when you're preparing your body for this journey. So we started to do the work incrementally, but the conversation happened very early in our relationship.
And how did it go after you'd been trying for a little while and it wasn't happening for you?
It did not go well at all. When I first went in and had my numbers examined, my doctor felt that everything was great, that everything pointed in the right direction, and that my body would be prepared for this journey. And we went through 2 rounds of IVF, and that did not result in the pregnancy we'd hoped.
So tell me, even before you got there, when the idea of IVF was suggested to you, was that a surprise or were you prepared for this being a possibility?
Oh, I was absolutely prepared. I have tried in the past to get pregnant, but that was not a part of the journey that was meant for me. And when I married Stephen, we started to explore it from all angles in a much more detailed fashion. And that led me to a few friends who, like your conversations that you have, were very, very open and honest about their journeys. And that gave me the confidence to go in and do more exploration about my body and what was going on with it and what I didn't know about it in my 30s that prevented me from the parent journey that I desired.
So you did these two rounds of IVF. What were you feeling? Obviously, there's the physical side of it, but talk a little bit about that emotional roller coaster. You're going in, you're waiting for calls to see how things are going. What was that like?
I have to tell you, it's almost like the pain you have when you go into labor. It was so traumatic. A lot of it feels like it was 1,000 years ago. I do look back at my journal and I knew I would be talking with you and I had a lot of frustration, to say the least. But in my journal, I recall writing that I read it for the first time in a long time. I said, F this. I don't need this. I'm fine. And it did not say exactly what I was referring to, but I suspect it was referring to the pain that I was experiencing, the emotional roller coaster, the tone on the voice of the nurse who called to tell me that the pregnancy did not take, you know, the joy of hearing the optimistic numbers about your body and then realizing that, well, that really doesn't mean anything. So yeah, it was very, very hard. It was hard on my husband, of course, as well. We always had open discussions about adoption and did not see it as a plan B or a default plan. That was not how we viewed it. So I recognized that there was always a path to parenthood, and it may not include the journey that we were currently on. I also kept it in the front of my mind that the enormous financial cost that I was able to cover was not something that was afforded to so many other women. Also, I should put it in perspective. I'm from a town called Luling, Texas, a very tiny town. There is not a facility like the many that are within a stone's throw away from my home in New York City in Luling, Texas. So even if a person had the financial resources to pay what my husband and I paid for this journey, they would still have to drive miles every day to get the checkups that I was able to take an Uber 5 minutes away from my home. So it's both economics and it's also location. So that's a big part of the conversation that I kept front of mind for me, knowing where I'm from, knowing, you know, the people who are still my friends in the same small town that I am from, who struggle and can't get this opportunity to just try. They don't get a chance to even hear the nurse say it didn't take because they don't get in the door.
So you were able to get eggs and get embryos, and you were able to get to that point in the process of doing a transfer. Did that happen after one or two rounds for you?
No, that was an ongoing journey. I had already frozen my eggs. And so that was something that I'd addressed prior to meeting my husband. So we had a great window, a launch point, but my body was not in line with what needed to happen for me to carry the eggs that I already had. So it was a mutual thing that we were going through, but I had very little hope in the process based on my personal medical history. So that was it'll never happen.
So how did you find the strength and the hope to keep going through these rounds and keep putting your body through this if you felt like this probably isn't going to happen for me?
I don't know. That's a great question. I have no idea. it certainly wasn't a, what do I have to lose? Because I could lose a lot. And I don't mean that in the sense of monetary, it's emotional. I could lose myself in the process. I could lose my confidence. I was launching a new talk show. It could have, you know, put a wedge between me and my husband. The disappointment early in a new relationship. Why are we going through this? We should just be going on, you know, our journey without a child. We're just getting to know each other. So I had a lot to lose. So that's not the answer. I don't know. I think it's, what do we summon in any situation where we want something? What do you summon? I don't know. I can't say what it was for me, but I have to believe it was faith. I'm a Christian. That's for me, my journey, my path. But there are a lot of people who pray way harder and it doesn't happen for them. So I recognize there was nothing special. I don't know what it was that made me do it. I often laugh and say Moses is the child of many, because when I was giving speeches, there were days that I couldn't muster the strength to inject myself. And I remember specifically a visit in Dallas to give a speech. And my best friend drove about 40 miles to meet me at the hotel. And she gave me my shot that night. One night, my husband was out of town and a dear friend from NBC came over. She gave me a shot. My hairstylist, Johnny, I was doing my shots in airports and anywhere you could name. I'd given a speech in Peoria, Illinois, and I remember going in the ladies' room and setting up a whole medical table. And I'm thinking, if someone's going to walk in this bathroom, they're going to think, what is Tamron Hall up to? Saw Cher in Las Vegas and in the back of the Uber was, you know, I snuck on a plane and put the blanket over me and injected myself. So I had been very covert in, you know, injecting myself in the strangest of places.
It's really beautiful thinking about like all of the people who contributed to that.
Yeah, my niece Maya, because my mother was too nervous and she was making me nervous. So Maya took over and Maya said, I can do it. And she was about 19 at the time. She did it.
So my husband was away at one point and I hadn't given myself a shot yet. I was like a real scaredy cat. So my mom came in and she was so nervous that it's the same thing. It got me really nervous. And I was like, no, forget it. And I took it and I just gave the shot to myself. And I was like, maybe that's the way to do it.
My mother was so nervous and she's like, I've got this. I'm like, no, mom, no, 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 no. And then Maya, my niece, said, I can do it, Aunt Tamron. And I thought, are you sure? She said, yes, I can do it. And she did it.
That's amazing. So what's the craziest place?
Oh, see, the airplane, Uber, countless hotels. I think Uber. I mean, that's pretty good. I don't know. On a plane, hiding under the blanket, hoping that the flight attendant didn't see me. And I don't know why I just didn't go in the bathroom. But for whatever reason, I stayed in the chair and got my little alcohol wipe and went to town.
I love that. So many good stories for your son. Did you ever have a time limit or a number of transfers limit or a monetary limit where you said, when we reach this point, we're done? Or was it more emotional for you? And you said, when I hit that point, I'll know to stop.
I believe I was at my last point right before we conceived with Moses, because I had gone through a lot of tests and a lot of stress tests and a lot of just emotional things happening outside of wanting to conceive. And I felt that I was driving down the street and I saw a sign and it said Black adoptions. And I thought, is this a sign? Maybe it is, right? And I took it as a literal sign and drove home and I said, you know, look, I'm ready for this part of the journey. And he said, absolutely, no problem. He was ready for it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals.
Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Just as Tamron and Steve were talking about starting the adoption process and thinking about calling lawyers, Tamron got another call. The embryo they had transferred took. And yep, she was pregnant. Tell me about when you found out you were pregnant. Did you take an at-home pregnancy test or did you wait for the call from the doctor?
No. So we were supposed to wait X amount of days and I couldn't take it.
Me neither.
And so, yeah, the night before, my husband was asleep and I went into the bathroom and I was just like, I'm going to do it myself. I got to know. And I took the pregnancy test and then I woke him up and I was like, oh my gosh. And he's like, what happened? I'm like, and he goes, holy S. And I said, yes. And then he felt like asleep. And then he woke up and goes, was I dreaming? He thought he was dreaming. He did not remember. Are you kidding me? And I didn't call anyone. I didn't say anything. I just kept it to myself. The next morning, he said, was that real? And I said, yes, I'm furious with you. You fell back asleep. He's like, I swear, Tamron, I thought I was dreaming. It's just a dream. Oh, my gosh. And he started crying. And it was real for us both at 7 a.m. as opposed to 2:25 a.m. or something like that.
So what were you feeling in that moment? I imagine it was quite a mix of emotions.
You know, it was disbelief. It was more of I was elated, but not, I don't know. You know what? I was more afraid than I was happy.
I understand that.
Because I was happy for sure, but I was afraid. And then I went in and they confirmed it and everyone said congratulations, but it was still surreal. And I called my mother on the way home and that was tough because I didn't want her to become so excited than have, because, you know, and I had to explain it to my mother. My mother's 71, so I'm having to take her step by step through this modern option to become pregnant. And all of which she enjoyed and Googled everything that I was going through every minute. I'm like, you know, so she studied a lot and stayed up to date on every single nugget that I shared with her. And I called her and said, well, looks like we're going to have a baby. And are you kidding me? No, I'm serious. So she was the first. And then my best friend since age 4, I called her right after.
If you've never been through IVF, you might not know that once you get pregnant, the meds don't stop. Many women have to stay on progesterone to help the pregnancy stick. And if you have to take the progesterone via injection, the shots are super painful. So even though you've made it through this big hurdle, actually getting pregnant, your IVF journey and the physical pain isn't over.
I was already on progesterone, but I thought I'd be able to switch over to an oral progesterone tablet. I don't even know if it's a tablet because they wouldn't let me do it. I just knew I had to keep on with the needle.
Oh, so you had to do those really painful progesterone shots.
Brutal. It was brutal. The other one was vaginal. I begged. I was like, oh, because there's a vaginal one. And he said, no, you can't. You need to do the injection. And I pleaded with him. But I had to do the progesterone. And as luck would have it, even in the beginning, it was just so scary. My husband wanted to go away just for a weekend to relax. And I didn't want to go too far. I said, well, you know, if something happens, I can't get back in time. Then what will, you know? And we went and I forgot my progesterone. Oh, I remember crying my eyes out. We called all of the pharmacies in the area and they all said, we can't get it within 24 hours. So we had to get back in the car and drive all night to get home by the window in which I was supposed to. And we called the doctor and he said, well, you know, you could be okay, but I wouldn't have been able to live with myself. I said, no. So we got in the car and I was mad. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, supposed to be this kind of romantic weekend away. And I was so bummed out. And we got back in the car and drove back home. We did stop at Mystic Pizza and I was able to say hi in my head to Julia Roberts. But no, we proceeded on home as a result. And that was the kind of fear that I lived with for those 9 months, which is why I kept my pregnancy private for 32 weeks.
I want to talk about that because I think people who haven't gone through loss or a journey like this don't realize that you can't feel celebratory right. And purely happy right at first. So What were the first few months like? I know you were not telling a lot of people. Was it nerve-wracking going in for every scan? Were you waiting for bad news?
I wish I could come up with a more beautifully worded answer, but it was a mix of cloud nine and disbelief. And then we saw our first images of my son, which remarkably, it's crazy how much he looks like that image from the very first time. And I went through the same things that anyone else would. He's a raspberry now. And my friends, we started to slowly tell our core group, about 15 people tops knew. And one friend would often call and say, how's the pear doing? Because the books measure the baby's size by fruit.
It's always a fruit.
Yeah, and I started to download the apps on my phone to each morning read what my body was going through. I didn't have morning sickness. I did not have a difficult pregnancy. I boxed. I continued my workout routine. I was fortunate to not have any of the potential medical issues that my doctor worried could happen. None of those things became real.
And when you did the transfer of the embryo, did you know the sex?
No, I didn't. They asked me if I wanted to know. And I said no. And then whatever week, you know, it was that I couldn't take it anymore, I asked the doctor, and my husband said, oh, well, I have to be on the phone. We have to hear it at the same time. We have to hear it at the same time. And he said it was a boy. And I started crying because I saw all of my fashion future float between me. That sounds so vain, but it's true. And my husband said, I will one day tell Moses that you did that. I'm like, there were just tears of, I visualized myself walking around with a little girl dressed exactly like me, which is so funny now that I have a son, and I don't like to get into gender labels, but it's funny now that I have a son. I could not imagine anything other than what I have.
Exactly. Don't you feel like you're made to be a boy mom now?
I do, or at least this boy's mom.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about 32 weeks. Did you always have that date in mind for when you would share the news?
No, not at all. I got a call from one of my team members who said to me that a tabloid had reached out and said that I was pregnant. And I said to my team that this was my journey and I didn't want to cede that to others. And I remember hearing that little Baby Shark song somewhere, I don't know where. And I ran upstairs and grabbed this dress, and my husband grabbed the phone, and I said, we're going to do a visual baby reveal. He's like, what are you doing? Are you nuts? No, I'm going to do it. We have to beat them. And I'd just done an event 2 days prior with the great author and supporter of women and children, Susan L. Taylor, the former Essence magazine editor. And I remember being on the red carpet with her, and she hugged me around my waist, and I thought, ah! And it didn't look like, you know, I was pregnant or concealing a pregnancy, and my arms were out. And so no one knew. And she called me that night and said, I feel you're a little fluffy around the side. Little fluffy.
Fluffy. I like that. And what did you say?
Susan, I'm pregnant. What? She screamed and she was so happy. So that was the beginning of the unraveling. But, you know, the fact that it was quiet for 32 weeks confirmed two things. I have awesome friends and they can keep secrets. And that it was time. So we shot the video from home in our kitchen, and we just announced something with the show that same day, I believe. And then I said, well, let's just tell everyone. And we did.
Baby shark.
Surprise, guys. Can you believe it? I'm about to be a mommy shark very soon.
Okay, so you tell people, and what is the reaction?
Celebration, happiness, shock. I remember my hairstylist, Johnny Wright, also works with Kerry Washington from time to time, who's a friend. And he said, Kerry said her mother called, oh my gosh, I just got an alert. Tamron Hall is pregnant. Before I knew it, you know, it was trending and people were calling and wanting to interview me, and my friends or people who I'm social or friendly with who did not know all felt betrayed. Wait a minute, I was with you. Or everyone has that. I remember you didn't drink that champagne. Oh, no. So you had all of the total recall from people. But no, it was an emotional and beautiful outpouring of love and support.
And I've heard you say before there's a difference between privacy and secrecy when it comes to pregnancy.
Well, I think that people, when they say, oh, you were keeping it a secret, and it wasn't, it was something that I was keeping private for my own mental health, for my husband's mental health, and I needed to get through as much of the journey as possible, as healthy as possible, without outside influences. And so that wasn't a secret because there were people who knew. A secret is you don't tell anyone. There were people who knew, who were important to my growth, who were important to my mental health and my foundation to shore me up for this journey.
So let's talk about his birth story. He came a little bit early, is that right?
He did. He came, I had a scheduled C-section, again, per my doctor's wishes. I didn't want one, but he insisted. I think a week prior to my delivery, I started to, I didn't have any pains, but I started to have anxiety, worried that something was going wrong. And I, like a lot of women, felt like he's not kicking enough. And I was Googling things and just spiraled out of control a bit. And my doctor said, fine, we'll go do a stress test on the baby just to let you know that everything's okay. But I know everything's okay, but you need to go. So I had a stress test. And my husband had a dinner that night. And it was supposed to be just a relaxing night with myself, right? And I think I was watching Marvelous Mrs. Maisel or something like that. I was binging at the time. And my husband got home around 10 p.m., got in bed. Everything was pretty, you know, usual. And suddenly I start to feel this weird sensation of pain, but not horrendous pain, but just sharp, surprising. And I stayed quiet until about 2 a.m. and I couldn't take it anymore. And I turned to my husband and he says, I said, help, which is not something that comes out of my mouth often. I said, help. And I said, I think something's going on. And he said, let me call your mom. And I said, no, don't disturb my mother. Let me call Carmen, which was a great friend of mine who's an OBGYN in Chicago. And Carmen said, oh, you're probably dehydrated. This often happens. Okay. I call my doctor. He said the same thing. You're probably dehydrated. I said, okay, that's fine. You're right. And it started to escalate. And my husband said, let's just go. We should just go check it out. And I said, I don't want to wait all morning in a hospital. I have things to do. I've got some meetings. You know, this is nuts. And you have a meeting and you'll be tired for your meeting. He said, oh, no. Let's go ahead and call your mom and tell her that we're just checking things out. And as he was dialing my mother's number, I got up and I fell to the ground from the pain, the sharp pain.
So was it a contraction?
Yeah, it was a contraction. And my husband called the Uber and I said, oh no, it was nothing. Let's go back up. This is ridiculous. And I fell to the ground again. And he said, no way, we're going. And by then I was really disappointed because I had an entire outfit plan that I didn't have time to grab. So there I was in this like moo-moo schmock thing that I don't even know where it came from. I think it was in some gift bag from something. And I had it on and we got in the car, and by then it was just whoosh, whoosh, pain in these waves. And we made it to the hospital. The poor Uber driver, he never said anything, but he kept looking back thinking, I'm sure, oh my gosh, she's going to have this baby.
And did you have like your hospital bag?
Oh yeah, everything was already taken care of. And my doctor happened to be already there. And I said, oh, this is nothing. I'm so sorry to inconvenience you all, and this will be fine. And I walked in and my doctor came in, he examined me, and he said, oh, looks like we're having a baby today. And 43 minutes later, I had my baby.
So tell me about those 43 minutes.
I made a video apologizing to my child for not looking cute. And those were my words in the video. Before I knew it, they were wheeling me through, and my husband was repeatedly asking, don't forget me, doctor. Don't forget me. You're going to come back and get me. And they said, we're going to come back and get you. They don't forget the dad. And I remember being a little afraid, nervous.
Were you afraid of the pain of the...
No, the unknown. I don't know what I was afraid of. I was afraid I was having a baby. They were going to take a baby from my bed. I don't know. I have no idea. I wish I could tell you. I felt almost like a child, helpless, where there were adults in control of me and handling it, and in charge of my life and in charge of my health. And then I went in and they kept reassuring me it would be okay. And as you know, they tell you, okay, you're going to get on. We're going to, you know, everyone's walking you through, you know, your life is being produced. I going back to what I do for a living at television, my life was being produced. It was someone telling you, lift your right arm. Okay, we're going to swirl you around. So you're being produced through this. And then the pain was pretty intense. And I was reassured that it would end very soon once I received my epidural. And they said, okay, just stay, you know, steady up. You know, and I was like, okay, I'm not moving. And are you okay? Do you feel anything? And then suddenly, nope, I feel nothing. Then they brought my husband in at some point. The rest is kind of foggy. And I saw my son for the first time through my husband's eyes because I was looking at my husband and I could see his face change. And that's how I first saw Moses, through looking at Stephen.
That's beautiful.
And then they brought him around and handed him to me. And I remember thinking, without saying a word, clearly, we both look at each other and I could hear him say, oh, this is you. And I heard myself say to him, and this is you. Wow. And there was a moment of, hi, without saying a word. You know, I felt that he wondered what I looked like and I'd wondered what he looked like. And, oh, that's you. It was clear as the words we're exchanging now. I heard him and he heard me welcome each other.
Did he look like you, like your husband? What did you think when you looked at him?
My mom said he looked like Larry King.
Well, my mom said that my baby looked like Winston Churchill. So our moms are similar.
He looked like a baby. He was puffy and red. And I don't think I even paid attention to what he looked like. I just kept looking at his eyes and they were just so round and so bright. And I just kept thinking, what is he thinking? And I remember quickly being taken to the room, and my mother got there very shortly after I was settled into my room, and just looking at him and thinking, wait a minute, last night you were in bed with us. And I kept thinking that there were three people in that bed and how fully formed and fully human and not a fetus and fully everything he was at this point in my hands. And a little cap, you know, on his head and his little wrinkly fingers and toes and his long feet. I was struck by the length of those feet. And just honestly, remembering how nothing in this world matters other than him.
That's really beautiful. And had you chosen his name?
I had, and I did send my husband back home to retrieve a custom hat that I had made from the hat shop where I get all of my hats. I love hats. I have short hair, and I wear hats a lot. And it had his name, Moses. And I knew that's how I was going to introduce his name to the people who have been so supportive and follow me on social media and follow my career and have rooted for me in the show and my pregnancy and all of these things. I thought, oh, I've got to give him a little Tamron Hall. We'd already decided on his name early on. My husband is Jewish. I'm Christian. And Moses was the only prophet recognized by all seven religions. I could not imagine any other name. Although we did bat around Bob in honor of Bob Marley. And I'm happy I did not name my son Bob, which I love the name Bob. And I still love the name Bob, but he is Moses. He's definitely Moses.
So at one point, you showed all of the needles that it took to get to this point. Do you remember the number of needles?
I don't, and I don't want to remember them. We still have them, though. My husband refuses to throw the containers away.
Why?
I don't know. He can't bring himself. And I said, let's go bury them. Then I thought, well, that might be illegal. In fact, I recently asked him as recently as the beginning of September. I said, I think it's time to move forward. And he said, no, he's not ready.
A different way of processing all of that. So when you look back on your long journey, I mean, we're talking years and years, and the physical pain and the emotions, what would you tell yourself at the beginning of this road to motherhood, now that you've been through it all and you have this beautiful, healthy boy?
Wow. Well, in retrospect, the progesterone wasn't so bad after all, because I only think about it when I'm asked about it. There are many things, but the love I have for him and the hopes and the dreams that I have for him, it's frightening and it's beautiful all at the same time. And I think that that's the journey. It's frightening and beautiful at the same time. And that's what I would tell myself then. And that's what I tell myself now. It is an experience like no other, but both of those sides of the experience deserve recognition, because they live together in your heart and your head, and they always will. But that's okay.
Tamron Hall is the host of The Tamron Hall Show. You can catch it weekdays on ABC. She also has a brand new book out, a mystery novel called As the Wicked Watch. When I was struggling to become a mom, going through recurrent pregnancy loss, multiple surgeries, IVF, and all of the emotions that come with it, people around me offered, how can I say this nicely? I guess advice and guidance. Really, I know they meant well, but until you go through this stuff, it's so hard to know what's just not helpful and what's downright rude to say. At the top of my list, an acupuncturist told me to stop doing IVF for a few months, then try naturally once I was more relaxed. And this was after I made it clear that I had no problem getting pregnant, just staying pregnant. Yeah, thanks, lady. Super helpful. So I reached out to other moms who have been on the receiving end of this sort of advice. Consider this your guide, what not to say to any woman who is struggling with fertility.
Don't tell anyone that maybe it's God's will that you shouldn't be a parent.
It will happen when the time is right.
I think the one thing that a lot of people say with like the best of intentions is it's going to work out for you. You're going to have a baby. But like, we couldn't rely on that. Like, we didn't know if that was going to be the truth. So even though people were saying that to try to be supportive and encouraging, it actually made it more difficult for me to attach myself to that sense of hope.
Don't ask whose fault it is. It could be either the husband or the wife.
One of the biggest misconceptions about struggling with fertility is that there's a fun aspect to it. That sounds silly, but a lot of people were like, oh, well, you must be having a lot of fun trying to have another baby. But the thing is, you're not having fun. You are very scheduled. You're very prescriptive. You're almost going through the motions of something that is supposed to be fun.
Have you tried supplements, essential oils, different positions?
Don't try to one-up people with your own infertility story, especially when you just didn't get pregnant within a year.
One of the most annoying things that my husband and I have heard is, do you just want to borrow our kids? No, I would not like to borrow your child and do the hard stuff, but not have it be my kid. I know people mean well, but sometimes I think the right thing to do is just say, this sucks.
You're still young. You have plenty of time. When you stop trying, you'll get pregnant.
My mom and dad didn't ask how I was doing and didn't ask a lot of questions because I think they didn't know what to ask and they didn't want to bring up a tough subject for us. But for us, it was like so central to everything in our lives at that time that we actually just wanted people to ask, how are you doing and what is the process and where are you and how does it feel?
Don't say we should have started trying earlier. You don't know how long it has been.
Why don't you just adopt? Just is probably the word in there that bothered me the most, because just implies that, number one, that it's easy, which it isn't, and two, that it's a smaller concept than it is and less important than it is, and there's nothing small about it.
Please don't ask anybody how they're paying for it.
Because I already had a son and I was trying to have another child and I was experiencing this unexplained secondary infertility, I also had people who were well-meaning, I'm sure, saying to me, well, you already have a child. You're so lucky. Yes, I had a son, but secondary infertility can feel especially lonely because you do get a lot of feedback from people that say, well, you have a baby. Some people can't have children at all.
That's it for this episode of Me Becoming Mom. If you like our podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. It really helps people find the show. And we'd also love if you told a friend about us. Next week, we're bringing you another extraordinary celebrity birth story. This one from fitness guru Jillian Michaels, who within the span of 72 hours became a mom twice over.
I called Diana at the adoption agency and I was like, okay, we need to have a real talk. I'm gay. I have a partner. She's pregnant as of this morning.
This podcast is produced by People in partnership with Pod People. Special thanks to our production team, Andy Cubis, Jason Mack, Ryan Rivers, Aliza Sessler, and Suzanne Semeloff. Our executive producers are Lauren Mickler, David Flumenbaum, and me, Zoe Ruderman. Thank you so much for listening.